You're the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari, Season 1, Episode 20. Hi, I'm Randy Cantrell. Welcome to the Year of the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari. This podcast is based on a simple truth. Who you surround yourself with matters. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari will interview thought leaders from all walks of life who will share how they leverage peer advantage and show you how engaging your peers more purposefully can hold the key to greater success in business and in life. Today's guest is Jenny Dietrich. Jenny is the founder and CEO of Armit Dietrich, a digital marketing communications firm based in Chicago. She is the author of Spin Sucks, co-author of Marketing in the Round, and co-host of Inside PR. Jenny is also the lead blogger at Spin Sucks and the founder of Spin Sucks Pro. Clients who have benefited from Jenny's forward-thinking approach to communication have included Ocean Spray, Sprint, Denny's, GE, and Abbott, to name a few. We welcome Jenny to the show.
Jenny Dietrich, welcome to the program. I can't tell you how thrilled I am that you are among the guests for Year of the Peer this year. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's absolutely my pleasure, and I believe I owe you like 10 for helping us with Marketing the Round, which is 5 years old, like this week, 5 years old.
God, that is so hard to imagine, you know, really. And I remember when you and Jeff were working on that and how fun that was. And yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. But, you know, I read it and really liked it. And when that happens, you know, other than supporting you all, because I wanted to support you as people, but I also thought the content was terrific. So I wanted to make sure. So if 5 years old, notwithstanding, if they haven't read it, they need to grab a copy of it.
A lot has changed since then, though. So
yeah. Well, hey. Well, anyway, as you know, a lot of the real premise for this program is this whole notion of who you surround yourself with matters. And I'd love for you to give us a sense of maybe some of the people that you surrounded yourself with, whether it was earlier in your life, earlier in your career. You know, some of those relationships that you felt were valuable for you.
The very first person I will tell you about is Gary Kisner. And Gary was the general manager of the Kansas City office for Fleischmann Hillard, which is where I worked right out of college. And I was very shy. I'm still introverted, but like introverted to the point that I was in a shell, and it was very hard for me to come out. And so Gary would pull me aside after, you know, he'd have me go to meetings, and he'd have me after I demonstrated that I actually had a brain. I just wasn't speaking. He would have me, he would give me like little pieces to say in client meetings, and he sort of took me under his wing and he started giving me advice. And I will never forget this as long as I live, because I think I was also embarrassed at the time. But he said to me, if you want to be taken seriously as a professional, there are a few things you have to do. And one of them is to stop biting your fingernails. And I was like, okay. But I would like, and even to this day, I have a nervous tic where I'll pick at my cuticles, because it's like ingrained. I mean, I was so shy that that's what I did as a kid. And so I started getting manicures so that I would stop biting my fingernails. And that was his big thing, was you have to stop doing this. And he really helped me come out of my shell and, you know, helped me figure out that I was decent at this communications thing, and that I had something to say, and that I could provide some good counsel. And I learned a ton from him. And then as I went out on my own, you know, I had a leadership coach, Randy Hall, who's been hugely instrumental in the way that I lead my team. Brad Ferris, who's in Chicago, who has an infectious laugh. So I almost hired him just because I wanted to be around his laugh. But he really helped me set process in place. And, you know, you surround yourself, especially as a business owner, I think if you're smart enough to do this, to understand that you have weaknesses, you try to surround yourself with people who have strengths where you don't. And so, you know, even though I had worked for Fleischmann for so many years, the leadership style was very much like, say as I do, you know, do and do it. And it wasn't really leadership. Mm. And so when I was able to get leadership out of skills out of Randy, and I was able to figure out process out of Brad, our chief financial officer, Michael Donato, hands down is one of the best guys I've ever worked with. And when I started working with him, it was during the recession and I was stuck in a lease because, you know, that's what you do is sign leases, right? And the recession just almost killed us. We almost went bankrupt. And he marched me right into the landlord's office and he said, this is what's going to happen and here's what we're going to do and this is what you can expect. And I went, you can do that? And he just, I mean, he did. And we certainly had to pay out, you know, a portion of the lease, but he got us out of it. And so I've surrounded myself with people that have, you know, have strengths where I have weaknesses or do things really well where I just don't want to do it. You know, I don't want to do my balance sheet and P&L. Ugh.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, it's kind of curious, this idea of people coming out of their shell. I'm sure now for you as a leader that you're really watchful for those people, right? Those yeah. people that aren't speaking up in meetings, that aren't making themselves heard when you know they've got something valuable to say. And how have you coached a lot of those folks?
You know, it depends on the person. Some people don't mind being called on in meetings. If it were someone like me, I would have been mortified, and I still don't like that. Don't call me on a meeting. I like to be able to absorb and observe and, you know, and then sprung thing in. So it depends on the person. So there's a lot of one-on-one coaching and, you know, providing a lot of self-confidence. One of my very first employees who was with me, gosh, 10 years, didn't even know how to sit at a table and use the right silverware because she'd never been taught that. And so, you know, it was stuff like that. So here's what you're going to do when you go out with clients and here's how you order the wine. And here, you know, if you're entertaining, these are the kinds of things that you should be thinking about. But all of that was behind the scenes. It was never in front of them, anybody. Right. So I think it depends on the person. We have a team member right now who really enjoys being put on the spot, but he won't do it himself. He won't. And so I'll say, so Pete, what do you think about such and such? And then he just lights right up. So you kind of have to figure out who the person is and what their personality traits are and what they enjoy. And then you figure out how to coach them through that.
You know, you wonder, I think over the years, kind of what happens to our confidence. Don't you? You know, with Eric Wall, who, as you may know, does all these great paintings on stage. And he talks about the fact that when he gets in front of a group of 6-year-olds and says, hey, how many of you can draw? Every hand goes up, you know, and it's like, oh, I can draw. Of course I can draw.
Of course I can.
You'll have like 2 people who will right. put their hand up, you know, and somehow we just, oh my God, it's so unfortunate from the perspective of how, you know, it just works against us so much sometimes when we just,
it does. Yeah.
You know, but part of that is all of that stuff that we all know about too, and that we have to have an environment that's safe. We have to have people and know that there are people around us who are, who understand that we're all human. We all make mistakes. We all ask stupid questions. We all do all those kinds of things, and it's totally okay. You know, and
we all put our pants on one leg at a time. Yeah.
Right. Well, and I think you certainly learned a lot of that too, because in addition to some of the people that have surrounded you and you've chosen to surround yourself with over time, you did join a CEO peer group. So I'd love to know kind of, you know, what that decision was about. Like, how did you go about A, discovering that, and B, realizing that it was right for you? And then after that, maybe you can share some of the value you've received, you know, from being in a group of your peers.
Sure. It's funny because you talk about group of peers and you imagine that they're all the same age and they have the same experience. And that was not the case for me at all. But I was at a networking event and Bob Burke, who ended up being my Vistas chair, approached me and he said, have you ever considered this? And I was like, I think I was maybe a year into business, maybe a year and a half. And I remember that I think that the threshold was $1 million and I was nowhere near that. I was, you know, I mean, we were maybe doing $300,000 or $400,000. It was not near $1 million. And I said to him, you know, thank you. Sounds awesome, but my business is not there. And he saw something in me, I think, and just kept, you know, he just kept coming around. And I really liked him. And so he said, why don't you consider this group? And so I went to a meeting and the people in that group were people that I wanted to be when I grew up. And so I figured if I surrounded myself with the people that I wanted to be when I grew up, that I would actually grow up to be that way. And so I did. I joined and, you know, there was everybody from a guy who owned a construction company that was leaving it to his kids, so he built a generational business, to a woman who was in a very male-dominated field when women were not doing the things that she was doing, and the, you know, the names that she had been called and the experiences that she'd had, and the, you know, just the stuff that you hear about that you don't think actually happened to her. Mm-hmm. And then there were, you know, there were wealth management guys, and there was an attorney, and, you know, so you had this wide breadth of experience, whereas an accountant. And so you had all of these people that were really smart and really knew business, but knew business in a way that I didn't. You know, I'm a communicator and a marketer. So I remember sitting in those first few meetings going, what on earth am I going to add to this? Because easily I was 20 years younger, easily. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I went, wait a second, none of you know how to actually talk about your businesses. Nobody's doing any marketing. And so it became a really good, it was almost like we had our own one company where everybody had a piece of it.
Right. Well, quite frankly, just the perspective of being 20 years younger alone, you know, adds incredible value. No, but adds incredible value. You know, when you think about customers and understanding the market and what's next and all of those kinds of things, I think that's really essential. Were you surprised also at how many shared challenges you had?
Completely.
You're all kind of sitting.
Everybody has the same problems. Everyone. It doesn't matter. Everyone has the same problems. It was so funny. Oh, you experienced that too. Okay. Yeah. So the idea that you're not alone, that you do have shared experiences and you are going through the same things. I mean, there's certainly some things that I didn't share, like generational business kind of stuff with, you know, having family members in. But yeah, I mean, HR issues and accounting issues and cash flow and like all of that, we all share the same things.
That's amazing. No, it's, you know, I think being part of a group like that really kind of teaches you a lot from the perspective of you're not alone by any means. Is there anything particular that you could point to? I'm sure there may be many, but is there one story in particular that you might talk about in terms of how the group specifically helped you through something or to, could have been an opportunity, could have been a challenge of some sort?
Yes.
Okay.
So like I mentioned before, we were in a lease and we had an office in downtown Chicago, and you know, I kind of thought that that's what you had to do, you know, because I came from Fleischmann Hillard, where you had gorgeous office space and it looked like a law office, and you know, people were dressed in business suits and you had, you know, benefits out the gourd, and if you made partner, you got a BMW. Like that's the experience that I had. And so I thought I had to build my business that same way, and I was running out of money because of it. And I also was challenged with, you know, just in general, I don't really enjoy people complaining about, you know, the lights being left on or somebody ate somebody's lunch or it's too cold in here, or, you know, I don't enjoy those HR things. Yeah. And I remember being in a Vistage meeting and complaining about it, and Glenn Horton sat back in his chair and he put his arms on his head, and I'm sure he does not remember this, but he said to me, maybe you're not fit to lead a team. And I went, well, screw you. But what that did, and you know, I mean, there's certainly other catalysts to it, but what that did is it allowed me to realize that that's not entirely a true statement, but I wasn't fit to leading a team in person. I'm great at leading a virtual team. Great. Because I don't have to deal with, if it's too cold in your office, you live there. Go turn it off, right? Like, I don't have to deal with any of that. And now the challenges that I'm working through with my team are real challenges.
Yeah.
They're, you know, focused on work, not on so-and-so ate my lunch. And I'm just far better at that.
You know, I'll tell you one of the things that, I'm sure you can probably relate to this too, because so I was president of a PR subsidiary in a larger ad agency for about 4 years. So I learned everything about kind of how to run the business and all that kind of stuff. But the agency had an enormous client that paid like within 2 days. We had zero cash flow issues. And it was, you know, we certainly were on top of our receivables and all that. But all of a sudden, when I started my firm and I decided that, oh, I'm going to work for big clients too, you know, and I realize now as when I'm getting pushed out 90 to 120 days by the likes of some big players, I'm like, oh my God, it just brought me to my knees. And I was like, it's a lot to deal with, you know, for sure.
A lot to deal with. Yeah. What? How crazy is it, though, that they had somebody who paid in 2 days? How does that happen?
I know. It was unbelievable. It was literally like, oh, yeah. And it was at the time, so this was back in the early 90s. I want to say it was about a $75 or $80 million agency. The client that I'm talking about was $55 to $60 million of it. And they got paid all the time, like super fast. Like,
wow.
So, yeah, there were no cash flow problems there.
Wow. So, but then you have the problem of having too many eggs in one basket.
There you go. Well, they no longer exist today as a result of that. And what's funny about it, I think about that, though, it wasn't that their agency went out of business because they lost that big client. Their agency went out of business because they were unprepared to lose a big client like that, you know, and it's really kind of what happens too.
That's too bad.
But yeah. Hey, well, let me shift gears a little bit too, because over the years, a lot of the real value, incredible value you've given to me, and one of the reasons I really pay attention to really just about everything you write is I think you've really got a good handle on kind of what's next and what's going on, particularly in the social and digital space. And I think right now, you know, we find ourselves in this place, if you kind of believe Edelman Trust Barometer, that, you know, trust in our institutions is really down. In fact, it was the first time, I think, in the time they've done the study over 17 years, where it dropped across the board, business, NGOs, media, and business. Yep. And I think it's during those times when we don't trust our institutions, we have to look to one another. And this is where this incredible resource we have in terms of our ability to reach out beyond our neighborhoods, but globally, is really powerful. So I'd love for you to talk about, you know, how we can engage others in a way that can really help us, especially during a time when we're not always as trusting in institutions as we might like.
Or the media, yeah. It's interesting that you say that, because you're right. And then a Nielsen study just corroborated that evidence by showing that trust in each other is the highest, but it's also where companies are putting the least amount of budget. Yes. So you have huge trust in each other. So influencers and, you know, neighbors and family and friends, but also complete strangers who are leaving reviews and things like that. That trust is clear up here, but the budget that companies are spending is down here. So it's interesting from that perspective.
And people are used to communicating down through their organization and have no real clue how to communicate across, you know, right, to understand right, who those influencers right are. That could be because yeah of tenure or technical expertise, or because they have a wonderful personality, whatever it is, they don't get those folks on board as ambassadors. And I think that's a real, real deficit, you know, for that, particularly when all this talk about alignment and engagement and everything else. And I think it is right there at our fingertips if we understood how to do that better.
Well, it's interesting too. Yes, because I think you're right from the perspective that we're not doing it across. Because what happens is you sit down and you go, okay, I have to reach moms ages 25 to 40, and they have to have kids between the ages of newborn to 10. And so immediately we think, oh, well, let's go to mommy bloggers. Well, in fact, that's probably not the case. I mean, instead, we should be starting with an influencer, and the influencer could be the guy out of New York City who's right doing car seat reviews and safety reviews on toys versus mommy blogger who's, you know, talking about the recipe that she made last night. Like, there's a big disconnect in how we're approaching that. So I think that's a big challenge as well. But in terms of working with each other and communicating, I think that's part of it, is really figuring out not who it is you need to reach, but who's going to be the catalyst to get there.
Yes.
And yeah, that's, I think that's, we're doing it backwards. We're doing it from the perspective of who we need to reach and then bringing the catalyst in. And I think we have to start with the catalyst first.
No, I think that's really important. I'd love for you to get to maybe respond to something. You know, we did our very first show with Charlene Lee.
Oh, sure.
And one of the things that Charlene talked about, because I was asking about kind of the evolution of social media, sometimes I'll talk to audiences about the fact that in 2006, you were the one that was named Person of the Year, right? But Charlene, I think, was talking a bit about the idea that social media, in some respects, has become a real bully pulpit versus a place for real rich conversation oftentimes. So I'd love to get your thoughts on that too, and maybe how we can get it to be a place where, if we don't trust institutions, we've got to listen to one another as much as just go and spout off on our opinions and be done with it, you know?
Well, and it's hard right now, I think, because we're so divided.
Yep.
I saw on Facebook this morning that somebody said, I find it interesting that everybody's all upset about politics on Facebook, and then you look at your time hop and they're still talking about politics on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's hard right now because we're not willing to listen to other people's opinions. You know, they've always said there are two things you shouldn't talk about in public, and that's politics and religion, because you're never going to change somebody's mind. But if you can have not on Facebook, but if you can have the smaller group conversations, like you and I could have a conversation about things that we disagree with and walk away fine. But I think when you have it behind a computer screen, you tend to say and do things you wouldn't in person.
Yes.
And you also don't get, you know, the tone inflection, and, you know, I could tease you in person and you'd know that I was teasing you. But if I did it on Facebook, you might think I'm being a raving lunatic. So I don't know. I don't know how we get there, because I think it's really difficult right now. You know, in the beginning of especially this last election, everybody said, okay, well, surround yourself with people with differing opinions. And I think people are to the point now where it's like they can't take the differing
opinions.
No. On either side. Doesn't matter. We don't want to hear it. So I don't know. I think we have to kind of settle down as a country overall.
You brought up an interesting point, though, when you talk about people don't want to engage in these conversations around religion and politics because they know they're never going to change another person's mind. I think the problem is that shouldn't be our objective at all, right? I'm not trying to engage in a conversation with you about religion because I believe I want you to change faith by the time that we're done, you know, having the conversation. Oftentimes, I just love to know, you know, just to understand, just to know why people come from all different parts of the world with all different influences and all different things and reasons that they see the world the way they do. And I think the more we can understand that, the better we can be for that, as opposed to going into it thinking we're going to engage in some kind of debate and we're going to talk about, like, all right, I'm going to change your mind. It's this notion that I'm right, you're wrong, that there can't be multiple truths out there. I'd like to think that social media could be a place where there is some respectful dialogue, you know, that happens. I don't know.
I think we'll get there eventually. I think what social does really well right now is it allows you to come together toward a common goal. And there certainly are, you know, there certainly are some conversations where the people are adults, you know, and you can have, but it doesn't, it's few and far between, you know, where somebody will say, I truly don't understand how this happened. Can you explain it to me? And so then you always have somebody who like comes into your living room who wasn't invited, you know, and then throws poop into it. And you're like, just what just happened? So you have that too. I think we can get there. I just don't think we're there. I don't think we're close yet.
I will say, though, that I'm really grateful for a lot of the people that I've met either through social media or, quite frankly, I've only met through social media. Like, I would never in a million years have met this person and gotten the benefit of their thinking and ideas and all of that if it weren't for this platform and getting to meet people in that way. I've found that to be an extraordinary value and benefit. I mean, we kind of crossed paths a little bit at Vistage, but the reality is I really got to know you through online and Jeff Livingston, your co-author on Marketing in the Round, and others who, I'm just really grateful that we have that. And not to mention too, the other thing we have is, you know, today there can be a university and no matter where it is in the world, we can get a degree from there. We can take courses from there. We can, you know, leverage their platform without having to move 1,000 miles away.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it goes back to to Glenn Horton telling me that I wasn't fit to lead a team, but the idea that I'm able to hire anybody no matter where they are. I have people in Canada. I have people in Europe. I have people across North America. I have people in the Philippines, you know, couldn't have done that 10 years ago. There's no way that would have happened 10 years ago.
So here's another question too, because you mentioned Bob Burke. I know Bob Burke and a terrific chair. I mean, he really, really, you know, among the better chairs at Vistage, I think. Is there anything in particular that you think in terms of watching him lead a group of CEOs that was helpful to you in terms of maybe leading your own team or things you learned about how he got you all to collaborate that you thought, maybe I can bring that a little forward with my group as well at your company?
First of all, he was incredible at herding cats. I always used to say to him, I don't envy you, because he has a room full of not just type A personalities, but double type A, like go-getters, don't listen to anybody, problem with authority, you know, like, so he was very, very good at sort of hurting all that. But what I really appreciate about Bob is two things. One is that he knew when something wasn't right and he was willing to fix it or try something else. And I'll give you a really good example that isn't confidential or anything, but he would say to us, he'd come to our one-to-ones and he would say to all of us, do you have somebody you can introduce me to for our group? Well, when you're asked that question, you're like, no, but if I think of somebody, I'll let you know. Well, that wasn't working for him. And so he went back and he said, okay, to himself, how can I change this? And he started going through our LinkedIn profiles, and he would come to our one-to-ones with five people, and he would say, can you introduce me to these five people? Oh, I do know people. So he was very, very, very good at that. And the other thing that he was really good at was, or is good at, he's not dead. he's no longer cheering, but he's not dead. Is he was really in tune to how your personal life might be affecting your professional life. And I think so many of us are able to compartmentalize and say, okay, well, that's happening over here, but it's not going to, but he was really attuned to that. And it used to drive me crazy, but he would say, I know this is going on at home, so how do you think that's affecting the decision you're about to make? And I'd be like, it's not. And he'd say, it is. And he was really good at that. Really good.
Interesting. So for you, so are you still a member of a group today?
I'm not.
Okay. And you were a member for how long?
I was a member for 9 years.
Wow.
Nine or 10. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's good. And are you involved in kind of in any industry groups now to try to, you know, kind of get that perspective? Because that gives you a wholly different value proposition there.
Yeah. I belong to two, what I'll call masterminds, one for internet marketers and one for communicators.
Oh, good. Excellent. So maybe tell us a little bit about what's next for you and for Armin Dietrich.
What is next for us? Well, I'm doing a 400-mile bike ride on Thursday. So that's really next.
And you have to surround yourself with other people that don't think that's insanity to do that.
Correct. Right? Yep. My sister was like, her husband's doing a 100-mile run next month. And I was like, that's insane. What is wrong with him? And she goes, you have no room to talk. Oh, 400 miles on the bike. What's coming up? So I'm working on a new keynote that I'm going to unveil in September that sort of combines. We had we are foster parents and have adopted out of foster care. So I'm combining that experience with communications and hopefully threading it together. So that will be probably the big next thing.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. Any advice you want to have for people out there in terms of how to go about trying to surround themselves with really good people that can make a positive difference in their life?
Can't remember who said it, but somebody famous said, you are the person that you surround of the five people that you surround yourself with. And I think that's really true, because if you surround yourself with people who push you to be your best self, you're going to be your best self. If you surround yourself with people who are satisfied with where you are in life, you're not going to do anything. So I think if it's a peer group, if it's a mastermind, if it's an industry organization, surround yourself with really smart people who are going to push you to be your best.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show today. It was such a great...
it's my pleasure.
Oh my God. No, it's wonderful to get to talk with you, and happy to do it again anytime. So,
okay, next week.
All right, there you go. Hey, well, you have a great one, okay?
All right, you too.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us today. To learn more about Peer Advantage, to submit questions to Leo and our guest, and to subscribe to the Year of the Peer podcast, please visit us at leobottari.com. That's LEOBOTTARY.com. This podcast is produced by me, Randy Cantrell, hosted, of course, by Leo Battari. Music provided by Kevin McLeod, Vibe Ace. licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.